LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Nathan Fox. I'm one of the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. With me is Michael Poirier. Michael is a former, well, he's a listener of the Demon podcasts, Thinking LSAT and LSAT Demon Daily. He's a teacher now, former LSAT Demon student, and he's a teacher now for us. What have you been teaching for us, Michael? How's that been going?
It's going well. I'm teaching advanced RC right now, and I pick up some shifts for other teachers along the way and tutor mostly.
Cool. Michael is also one of our Canada experts. He's an Ottawa, Toronto native, and you are working now on putting together some resources, to go alongside our Demon, the LSATdemon.com/scholarships.
Yeah, right. Francesca and I are going to get together and talk about how we're going to hash that out.
Great. Hopefully by the time this show airs, we should have some Canada-specific resources accumulated. I don't know exactly what the URL is going to be for those yet, but we are going to be posting something akin to lsatdemon.com/scholarships. I think we can probably add a link to the scholarship estimator to have, you know, here's a repository of some Canada-specific information. So check that out. It's lsatdemon.com/scholarships, and there should be a link there with some Canada stuff. Okay, let's take this email from G. You want to go ahead and read it for us?
Yeah, for sure. Great. Hi, Ben and Nathan. Before getting into my question, which you likely gathered some tidbits about already from the email title, I just have to tell you how effing awesome you two, your team, and the Demon are. Here's my shortish way of doing so. I almost gave up on law school, despite really wanting to be a lawyer, because I had official scores as low as 152, cold, 147, post-Kaplan, ouch, and 148 from back in the paper test days. Yet after just 2 months with the Demon, I'm up to minus zero on games, after starting off with single-digit correct answers and steadily scoring in the mid-160s now. I never thought I'd see the day, and I seem to only be getting better. Holy shit. While I initially resisted the advice to wait until the next cycle to apply, I've come to my senses and I'm planning to apply for the 2023 admission, or possibly even 2024. This means that I will be around 40 when I graduate. And a small part of me worries that I'll have a harder time securing employment than some of my younger classmates. I like to think that I can lean on my nearly decade-long career in HR and fluency in multiple languages to be appealing somewhere, though I'm not entirely sure. Is this anxiety about my age at graduation unwarranted, or is it just something to consider and plan for? Have you heard stories of older first-time attorneys having trouble starting off? And if so, what's your advice? I would be the first lawyer in my family history, and I have literally no idea how any of this works. So I'd love your perspectives. Thank you. Cheers.
Okay, so I can start here. Well, first of all, congratulations on your improvement. I mean, going from a post Kaplan 147 all the way up into the mid 160s after 2 months of the Demon. I kind of wish that it was surprising to hear that, but it's not. It's like super common. We have all kinds of refugees from other prep programs, and the test makes perfect sense. And, you know, some of these other prep programs out there, like they seem to try to, it's like they're intentionally trying to make it hard. And, you know, we really believe that the LSAT is easy, and we can show you how it's easy, and the results prove it. So glad G found us, and I'm really glad we can help. I'm also glad that G is waiting to apply until early in the next cycle. Trying to rush into this is a good way to make yourself pay full price. And we really want you applying in September or not at all. At least that goes for all U.S. schools and even a bunch of Canadian schools. The earlier you apply, the better. In the U.S., it can mean $150,000 worth of tuition scholarships if you apply early in the cycle. So I'm glad, even though G is a little bit older, I'm glad that he or she has decided to play this game in the way that is most advantageous for the applicant to play it. Law schools, by the way, will, happily encourage you to apply late in the cycle. That's because their interests are just not aligned with yours. They want applicants all year round. They want applicants all the way up until the very beginning of the cycle, because they need people to deny, because that will improve their yield and make them look better on their 509 reports. they also need people who are going to pay full price. And the people who apply late in the cycle tend to pay full price. So listen to us. Do not listen to these schools that are giving, you know, they just have no incentive to give you good admissions advice. Anyway, what do you think, Michael, about G being a little bit older? Is this something that G should even worry about?
Probably not. And the mantra of go don't pay for law school, probably it applies to everybody, obviously, but applies even more, I would say, in this case. The older you get, the less you want to be paying, and ideally should be going for free. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's anything to worry about. If this is a path G is set on, go for it. Just make sure you're going for free.
Yeah. Ben says this a lot on the Thinking LSAT podcast, that it, you know, when you're older, you just don't have the rest of your life to try to pay back $250,000 worth of law school tuition. So assuming, you know, maybe G has a family, maybe G has, you know, other, like a mortgage and stuff that young people don't sometimes have. And it's all the more reason for G to just apply early and apply broadly with your very best LSAT score and hopefully go for free. I know that, you know, employers are not allowed to discriminate against people for being older. That said, they certainly could. It'd be easy for them to do so without, you know, like having to acknowledge that they're doing it, right? You walk into an interview and they can tell that you're 40, not 20. And if they wanted to discriminate against you for being older, I don't think there's anything that stops them really from doing that, because they're going to know roughly how old you are. That said, why would a firm, we have no idea what G actually wants to do, but why would a firm discriminate against somebody for being slightly older?
At the end of the day, if G's coming into law school for free, which I would assume that would mean that they're one of the better candidates in their class, they'd probably also do better in law school and should have jobs available to them regardless.
Yeah, I agree. And the decade-long career in human resources is certainly a feather in your cap. You're going to have some, especially if that's kind of like the area of law that you might want to work on in, you know, if you're like maybe looking to go in-house somewhere, you can lean on that background. If you're looking to work in any kind of, you know, law firm life that has corporate clients, I can see how the HR career would be a feather in your cap. The multiple languages, I think, is really a selling point for employers. That's actually one of the best things you can have on your resume. It might be the best thing. I'm trying to think of anything that would be better than that. Can you think of anything that would be better than that for employability?
All right, are you talking like outside of the actual degree?
Yeah, outside of, you know, I went to Harvard or whatever.
Yeah. You know, I know it, like being able to speak French definitely helped me get my job, my current job in Canada. You're just able to access a whole new set of potential clients that other people don't have access to.
Yeah, and it's also really rare. There are plenty of people who speak French, and there are plenty of people who speak English, but the number of people who speak French and English is significantly smaller. So you're already way more employable. And now if you're a lawyer, you know, you've got a law degree and you can speak multiple languages. There's just not very many people who can do that. I mean, I know for sure, like everybody wants to work in immigration law in the United States. It's, you know, it seems like half of our Demon students want to work in immigration law. And that's really, really hard if you don't speak Spanish or, you know, some other language that has many potential immigrant clients. It's just like very difficult to serve those populations if you don't speak the language of those people. So, yeah, I think that the fact that G has fluency in multiple languages is going to be extremely appealing to employers. I guess the last thing that I would want to say to G is, what difference does it make really if you're, you know, I think people need to be thinking about a 30-year legal career. I suppose if you're a little younger, you could be thinking about a longer legal career. But for someone who's age 40, I think you still could easily have a 30-year legal career. And so I can't imagine why employers would want to discriminate against you. And as far as your own life is concerned, This lesson is not really for G, because G seems like they have already taken my advice, but you know, G waited another year or two, right? Because G decided, hey, I need the best LSAT I can get, and I want to apply at the beginning of the next cycle. And so what that means is, you know, G is going to not start law school in until, let's say, 2023 to graduate in 2027. And, you know, G will be 42, 43. And maybe that means that G only has a 28 or 29 year legal career instead of a 30 year legal career. But what difference does that make?
Exactly. I've had students talk to me about being 26 and feeling like they need to apply this cycle because life's happening too fast. And now you got G, on the other hand, who is 40, who is playing the right game, who's playing a patient, and who's most likely going to come out of this paying nothing for law school, coming out of it with no debt, and will arguably be ahead of the curve even more than someone in their 20s who takes on the full debt.
Yeah. The year or two, you know, later start in your legal career makes almost no difference in your life. The six figures worth of debt makes a gigantic difference in your life. I mean, I know people that I went to law school with more than a decade ago now who have been just busting their ass nonstop since we graduated, and they are no closer to being out of debt. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, but why? Because that interest just keeps piling up, and they're not making a dent in it.
Yeah. We have a thing called income-based repayment. Are you familiar with income-based repayment?
No, I'm not.
Yeah. Well, you're Canadian, and you know, in Canada, they have a much more civilized system. But in the United States, people borrow so outrageously much money for law school that there's this system that's called income-based repayment when you graduate. And what they do is you report to them your income, and they say, oh, okay, so that means you can afford to pay X per month. And the X per month is like, you know, it is kind of like, it's still a lot. It's like the most that it's the most they think they can get out of you per month. But in many cases, the debt load is so high that the income-based repayment monthly amount is actually less than just the interest that you're being charged on that loan. So you're paying less than the debt service on the loan. And when you do that, you don't get it's not like they just waive the rest of the interest. What they do is they capitalize the interest. So they take the excess remaining, the interest that you're not covering, they're taking that and just capitalizing it. They're just putting it into the principal of the loan.
So you're just running on that hamster wheel, not making any progress.
You're actually making negative progress. The balance of, so you're going to work every day, busting your ass. You're diligently paying your monthly payment every month, but you're not even covering the interest that is accumulating every month, the interest that you're being charged every month. You're not even paying that. And so the balance of your loan is going up. You're working your ass off. You're making your monthly payments. Those monthly payments are not easy. They're not low. They're still like a lot. But the reason why it's a lot is that people borrow just an insane amount of money for law school. I mean, if you pay full tuition to law school in the United States, you're paying $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, even $60,000 a month. A year. $30,000 to $60,000 a year.
Isn't it up to 70 now?
Sir, 70 at some schools. You borrow $150,000. That's not even counting living expenses or books. It's just tuition. But these students routinely graduate with a couple hundred thousand dollars of debt. And if you're paying 5% on $200,000,
10,000,
then yeah, the annual interest, just the interest, is 10 grand. So, you know, unless you're paying $1,000 a month, like if you paid $1,000 a month, you would barely be covering the interest. But what happens instead is, oh no, you're going to be an income-based repayment. So, you know, your payment, hey, it's only going to be $575 a month. Now, $575 a month, that's a lot of money.
$575 just to put yourself in an even bigger hole.
Yes. $575 a month and still not. Yes, it is getting worse. You are no closer to paying it off. In fact, you're further away from paying it off every month. So back to G. G has changed his or her life with a, you know, looks like 20 point improvement on the LSAT. G has made a very wise decision to apply at the beginning of the cycle. I don't think you need to worry, G, about your employability. And I think that, you know, even if it is like slightly harder for you to get a job because you're a little bit older, you're still going to be in much better shape than whatever 26-year-old ran, you know, head first into this gigantic wall of debt.
Right. And G's only in the mid 160s now. So if G even takes a test in this summer, applying for next cycle, there's no reason G couldn't be potentially in the high 160s to even 170s. And that's a completely different applicant.
Yeah. And graduate from law school, you know, like get a scholarship, kick ass while you're there. People who are there on a scholarship do tend to be sort of better situated for law school. They're likely to succeed in law school. So you go there, you kick ass, you get all the best opportunities that that school has to offer. I don't think you're going to have a problem finding a job. And even if you do, you're not going to have a life ruining amount of debt to try to overcome. All right. Anything else for G?
No. Other than that, just with that higher score, also potentially going to a more prestigious school, in which case not only going to a more prestigious school, but for free.
Yeah. I mean,
just another asset.
Ultimately, you have to decide what school you're going to go to, but what we continually recommend is that you apply early, broadly, with your very best LSAT score, and then you can weigh multiple offers. And when you have multiple offers, then you can decide, you know, where, what kind of a trade-off you want to make between price and the you know, prestige of the school. But we always recommend taking the money. I mean, the best full ride you can get is where you probably need to go. And maybe we make an exception for Harvard or Stanford or Yale, but I'm not really making exceptions for other schools in the top, even other schools in the top 14. If you can get a full ride, let's say to Georgetown, then you also could get into all kinds of really great schools in the DC area and go for, sorry, not if you can get a full ride to Georgetown, if you can get into Georgetown, then that means you can probably get a full ride at other prestigious schools in the DC area. And I think that that's true almost universally, that, you know, there will be some higher ranked school that wants to charge you full price, but there's going to be some just slightly lower ranked school that wants to give you a full ride. And given the horror of, you know, $250,000 worth of debt or income-based repayment with an ever increasing amount of debt. that's why our tagline is don't pay for law school.
That's not even considering the living expenses on top of tuition, books.
Got to eat, got to pay your rent, got to buy books. You know, I mean, like books per semester. I was in law school in like 2009 and the books when I was there were like $1,500 a semester. So it's only worse now, I'm sure.
Yeah. So that translates almost 10 grand for your entire.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Email daily at LSATdemon.com. If you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news, thanks for listening.
Thank you.